Speaking of Duplass Brothers, I watched Tammy last night.
Hey, Tammy's fucking terrible.
There's Mark.
It was bad.
It wasn't good, no.
And, like, I like Melissa McCarthy. It wasn't just bad because it's, oh, she does the same thing. Yeah. It was fucking bad.
The premise was fucked.
Speaking of Duplass Brothers, though, Togetherness on HBO.
Don't have together. Don't
really
have
fucking good. Huh. Really fucking good.
What's up? This is Movies On Up. They're not really criminals, but everyone's got to have a dream. I have a dream, and that is to host a weekly podcast along with my good friend, Mr. Dave Pacella.
That's me.
That's Dave. He is the man of my dreams and my co-host on this here podcast, Movies On Up. He's Dave. I'm Ryan. They're not really criminals, but everybody's got to have a dream is our tagline contest for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, we'd love to hear about it in one of the three following ways via email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or you can tweet your answer directly at Mr. Dave on the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you are correct, and if we choose you, we will give you a lovely Movies On Up prize package. It might come in a heart-shaped box with some chocolates. I don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe, maybe not. Probably not. But it is Valentine's Day this week, or so I'm led to believe. Around these parts, we have some traditions. We have, you know, the games that we play. We have the box office bash, and we have the fantasy film ball. We have our Uppy Awards, which are traditions, but perhaps a tradition unlike any other around Movies On Up parts is our Valentine's Day episodes, which we tend to devote to a very special individual in Movies On Up history, and that is the lovely and talented Miss Anna Kendrick. So when Dave and I sat down this year, we're like, all right,
last year we did our top 10 Anna Kendrick movies for Valentine's Day.
And we could have just done that again, but because we like to do a little bit of work for you guys, we thought, no, let's do something else. Let's do a movie. And kind of the natural choice was Pitch Perfect, because the Pitch Perfect sequel comes out this year. But then I started thinking about it a little bit more, and I thought, no, let's do something a bit out of the box. Let's do, maybe it might be the movie where I fell in love
with. It's the movie I fell in love with her.
Yeah, which is really weird, because she's a super bitch in Rocket Science. So that's kind of what we decided to do. From 2007, it's Jeffrey Blitz's Rocket Science, starring Anna Kendrick, Rhys Thompson, and Nicholas DeGusto. As we are wont to do when we do movie episodes, let's talk a little box office right out of the chute. It opened August 10th of 2007 in 46th place with a whopping $58,536. The number one movie of that week was Rush Hour 3, opened to $49 million. So it's really just about $49 million out of first place. Just missed.
If it had to do it all over again, I feel like it'd make that money.
Yeah, Dave and I would see it probably a couple times in the theater. I don't know if we'd see it $49 million worth of times, but I digress. It went on to gross domestically almost $715,000, which puts it all-time domestic charts 7,253rd place, as we are wont to do on this podcast. Dave, can you guess the movie that is directly above it in 7,252nd place? It's from 1990.
Blood Ring, starring Christina Loken.
No, it's Coupe de Ville, of course, with $715,000. And the movie directly below it, 7,254th place.
House of the Dead.
No, it is the Michelle Trachtenberg, Elizabeth Shue, Joey Gordon-Levitt flick, Mysterious Skin.
It's a good movie.
From 2005. That is the movie directly below it. I was kind of looking around just because it's fun to do in these 7,000s, just to give it a little bit of context. 7,263. That is the Korean version of Old Boy. Really good flick down there in the 7,200s. And a movie that is maybe timely. 7,267. So
Mumford.
No, not Mumford, but it is another movie that you thought was going to be awesome. It's Men, Women, and Children. That's where that movie's at.
Yeah, it wasn't awesome. It wasn't good. It wasn't good at all.
Yeah, not great. Didn't make a whole lot of money.
For good reason.
It made less than Rocket Science, so I just thought I would, I don't know, maybe take a little bit of dig and put that in there.
Once you factor in inflation, it made a lot less than Rocket Science.
That's in fact true. Obviously, Rocket Science is a movie that Dave and I both like, and you can probably figure out why. I kind of wanted to go back and look at the director. I really like the movie. He wrote and directed it, so I thought to myself, what else did Jeffrey Blitz do? So you go over to the IMDb, and you see he did Spellbound. That documentary was really, really good. And Lucky, which was a documentary about lottery winners. That's mostly it. He's got this. He's got a couple documentaries, and he's directed a lot of TV.
He did Review, starring Andy Daly, on TV, which is one of the best shows on TV. It's on Comedy Central. If you have not watched it, watch it. He did 17 episodes of that.
I have not seen that, but I have seen Parks and Rec and some of The Office, and he directed some of those. It's really kind of a, I don't want to call it a weird career, because he's got, those documentaries are really, really good. And this, and there's not really a whole lot else, and it's sort of surprising, because you see a writer and a director, this guy's got some talent, and then you just kind of don't hear from him for a long time.
Yeah, and it's a shame, because it wasn't like he just had a good story, and it's not like he just struck gold like by chance. The movie is written awesome. The dialogue in it, it's got a Juno-esque feel to it, where you're in this world, like you feel like you're in with these kids. The story is great. The characters are amazing. Even everything down to the brother and the mom's boyfriend's son. Like, all the small characters make their mark. Like, it's like a Juno Napoleon Dynamite mix of this movie. Like, it takes you into this world with these strange characters, but it's grounded enough that it feels real. And it's really well put together. Thematically, it's fantastic with the overriding narration that's used just enough. The constant makeout scenes. There's so much good about this movie.
That's like a transition.
Yeah, it's a beautifully written and directed movie. And he's got something in the works where he's directing a script by the Duplass brothers, which seems kind of perfect. But I just want to see another movie from him, because Spellbound's a great documentary. Lucky's a great documentary. And this movie fits that filmography, because it very much fits in that world.
It does. It fits in that world. It fits in that style of a documentary. A lot of the narrations that you have, it's not being narrated from the point of the main character. It's kind of that disembodied narrator. And I think that feels very much like a documentary, and it kind of weaves its way throughout the movie. It kind of reminds me a little bit of A Christmas Story, the way it's narrated. Not that that's a documentary or anything, or not that it necessarily feels like one.
No, and the narration isn't as heavy. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of narration, but this is used in a way where it's different. Like, it's a different use of narration, because it kind of comes out of nowhere. You're not connected to the narrator in any way, and it's sporadic. It's not like, oh, I'm going to see this scene, and then the narrator's going
to
come.
Signify it's the next scene.
The narrator just comes on randomly, and there's no real science to it. So it's done perfectly, because the narration doesn't get tiresome.
No, it doesn't. It's like you said, it's used sparingly. And the way that it is used, at least in the beginning, is to introduce us to a couple of, I don't want to call them main characters. I mean, obviously, Jenny Ryerson, a main character, Anna Kendrick, and Nicholas DeGusto's Ben Wechselbaum, who we see in the beginning, and then we don't see him again until the end of the movie. But the way he's set up is the hyperbole that's used to set up this guy as pretty much the second coming of a bunch of people that I don't know, because I don't really follow a high school debate in New Jersey. But it makes Wechselbaum seem really pretty cool for a speech kid that, I mean, unless you were a speech kid in high school, I was for a year. I don't think that people would necessarily equate those folks as being cool. But in his world, in this very specific world, which this movie kind of takes place, he's kind of like the king shit.
They call him God. He's the god of that school. And he's really good. I'm not a big Nick DeGasco fan. He was okay on Heroes. I don't like him on Masters of Sex. I think he's terrible on Gotham in his brief appearances. I don't really like the kid as an actor. But he nails it in this movie. He's really, really good. He brings exactly what he needs to.
I'd argue that this movie's probably better written than Heroes and Gotham are.
Oh, without a doubt.
He's got some better stuff to work with, which shows that if he has better stuff, he can probably do a better job than he's doing now. But one of the things that I really do like about the beginning of the movie is sort of the juxtaposition. You have, you know, your argument about farm subsidies, and then you have the argument at Hal's house where his dad is leaving his mom, and it's really, again, the dad is a character that you see right at the beginning very briefly, and you don't see him again till the end. But I love that juxtaposition between an argument, like a fake argument that's being staged, and a real argument.
Real life.
Yeah, that's happening in real life. And then, again, it's hyperbole, but this idea that somehow in this night, this magical power of speech is being transferred from Ben Wexelbaum, the god of speech, who just stops his ability, to a character of Hal who can't get through an entire sentence.
Can't say pizza.
Right. Who's now kind of got the golden tongue. So that's the premise of this. Not necessarily the premise, but that's sort
of. That's this introduction.
It's a fake premise that they set up, is like, resolved. Ben's speech ability is given to Hal, and you spend the rest of the movie arguing either the affirmative or the negative. And I think there's a lot more evidence to build the negative in that case.
Just the introduction. I'm wrong sometimes. Like, I'll see a movie and I think, oh, this person's going to be a star. I had that feeling about Rhys Thompson, who later became credited as Daniel Rhys Thompson. I mean, this is a star-making performance. This should be. The kid is really, really fantastic in this. I mean, he's got a lot to work with. He's got a lot to do. He's, you know, it's very easy to fake stutter and almost come off insulting or just not pull it off. But you feel bad for him, you know?
And if that's the thing. If he fake stuttered and did it poorly and it seemed like he was almost making fun of people like that, you'd hate him.
He felt real. Right. The scenes of him practicing saying pizza, 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 and then he gets in the lunch line, pizza or fish, and he can't say it. He could say plenty of other stuff. He just can't say pizza. I mean, that gag runs a few, not really that it's a gag, but that
the pizza
conflict
specifically, yeah,
comes up a few other times. You know, he just does so good because you feel bad for this kid. He has this heart. He has this desire to be somebody. He can't get the words out.
You mentioned that you thought you were hoping that this would be like a star-making role for him. Like the very next year, the assassination of a high school president, and he was really good in that,
too. He was fantastic in that. It was very much the same vein as this, but then after that, he was in that movie with Kat Dennings, the Daydream Nation, whatever that was. Then he starred in a movie directed by that country singer, Colt Ford or whatever, Super Zeros or something.
Yeah.
And then since then, like,
Perks of Being a Wallflower, he didn't have a huge role in that, but I liked the movie. A lot of smaller stuff, which kind of sucks because he was so good in this. And you kind of see that some of the people from this movie went on to have a little bit bigger of a career, obviously. Anna Kendrick is one.
Jonah Hill.
Yeah, Jonah Hill shows up very briefly, and I'll get to him in a second. And even DeGusto, he's been in some bigger things. Daniel Rhys Thompson seems like, you know, this, he was primed. He really did carry this movie wonderfully.
Again, you root for Hal. Like, even in his low moment, you just feel for him. And just stuff like it, when he does finally get the pizza and he pumps his fist. Like, it's like,
you're pumping your fist?
Yes. It's so good. And when he's hurt, you're hurt. And, I mean, that comes from Blitz. Like, it's well, when Margot Martindale, the coach, gives the big reveal at the end to him, like, you feel. Like, you understand how he feels. Yes, I want to steal my brother's whiskey and throw a cello through somebody's window.
I mean, I've seen this movie a handful of times, but every time I see it, I forget how much of a bitch Jenny Ryerson is. She's an awful character. This movie might be prone to hyperbole, and maybe we are around movies on up parts as well, but I would argue, maybe not as well as these debaters, that Jenny Ryerson is one of the worst movie villains in history. Because if you really think about, you know, what she does in the movie, she doesn't kill anybody, no. But she takes a kid who can't speak. It's a disability for this kid. And she puts him in the worst possible place for him to be.
And makes him believe he belongs there.
And makes him believe that she's into him. It really, really baits the hook. And then just leaves him high and dry.
And I feel like her being such a bitch is just magnified more because the movie does a really good job of displaying adolescence. Hidden inside here is a really good high school movie. It feels real. The characters feel so real and so natural that you feel like you're watching a documentary almost of these kids in high school. And that just makes what she does so much more evil because it's grounded. And I could totally see it. The high school that's in my backyard. Like, there's probably some cunt that acts like Jenny Ryerson.
Movie's an hour and 41 minutes long. It takes 50 minutes that you're building up. And then it's, I can't think of a better way to describe it than like a complete like pro wrestling heel turn where all of a sudden Hulk Hogan's a bad guy now. That's pretty much what Jenny Ryerson does.
Out of nowhere.
Right. In the reveal that you mentioned, sort of, I guess all the signs are there, you know, that she's going to transfer schools and leave Hal all alone in this debate that he's clearly not ready for. She didn't let him get ready for it. And at that point, you do like, oh my God, this is a terrible human being. Goddamn horrible human being.
But my God, do I still want to get with that?
Yeah, it's tough to argue. And maybe that's why, like, I want to give her the benefit of the doubt just because I do think she's a lovely young lady. But every time I get so fooled good. Right along with Hal, I know she's going to do it.
I told my girlfriend as we started to watch this, I said, this is Anna Kendrick, and she's the biggest bitch in movie history in this movie, but I love her for it. And she is the biggest bitch in movie history.
Exactly. I mean, at least Darth Vader, at the end, he comes around. You know what I mean? There is no redemption. There's no burning on a pyre in front of Ewoks for Jenny Ryerson. She's a bitch. And then even through the end, she's like, yeah, that's right. I'm a bitch.
Yeah.
Eat it. We talked about this, you know, this heel turn that she leaves him all alone at the speech tournament. And then we kind of get maybe the best scene out of the movie. It's after he steals her trophy and he gets home. One of the things I like most about this is we'll dovetail into what Dave likes. It's the Violent Femmes music on the cello.
Yeah, throughout. I mean, the music in this is fantastic. The music throughout the whole movie actually adds a lot to it. Between the kid's parents playing on the cello mm-hmm. and the piano, and just the songs that are chosen. The soundtrack for this movie is top-notch and actually adds a lot to it.
It's really rad, and during this scene, you kind of see the buildup. Dave mentioned the breaking into his brother's theft box, and he gets the booze, and he gets drunk, and right in that bedroom, not that it really matters, but we did at the end of January, a couple weeks ago, we did our best big game movies, and one of my big game movies was Jumanji, and if you look in Hal's closet, he's got Jumanji. So episodes of the podcast, just synergy, working together. And then we get what's Dave's favorite scene. I call it like the reverse Lloyd Dobler with the cello in the front yard.
He just steals his friend's mom's cello, and he's trying to throw it up at her window because he thinks she's going to bed. And then he just throws it through the living room window as her and her parents show up. And dejected, defeated, he doesn't stay to explain himself. He just walks by him. And one of my favorite lines in movie history, he just walks by him and says, there's a cello in your house now. And then runs off down the street. Like, it's such a great moment. And it's so teen angsty. This dude has been wronged so poorly.
And he does exactly
that's
what,
all he can do.
What you would
all
think
he can do is steal a cello and throw it through a window.
Exactly. He gets drunk. He gets on his bike. And he drives it down to his buddy. And the only reason he's friends with this kid
is because he lives across the street.
Exactly. And he's up there in the room peering across with the binoculars. And he's loaded. And he's like, I'm going to show this bitch. And this is how he chooses to do it.
There's a cello in your house now. I don't know why. I don't know that any line in movie history has ever made me laugh that hard. Just the delivery of it.
It's the whole buildup of that scene. It's not necessarily a laugh-out-loud, funny line out of context, but, you know, just the embarrassment that this kid obviously feels the whole day for him when he's on the phone with his counselor or speech therapist or whatever, and he just kicks the bus that she drove in
yes.
on. He's like, wait a minute.
He just kicks the tire.
Yeah, it's been such a shitty day. And that's kind of the culmination of it is, of course, I'm going to get caught red-handed doing this. And that's his explanation, is there's a cello in your house now.
Yeah, there's so many good lines that I think of there's a cello in your house now, and it just makes me think of other lines that just make me laugh.
I wrote down a couple of my favorite, we'll get to them at the end, but the movie, while it's couched in, like, speech, spoiler alert, it's not really about speech. It is a love story. It is really Hal's first experience with love, and he's trying to figure out how to get through all that. Well, that's kind of the first half of the movie, right about to that heel turn part, and then he's not so much in love anymore. From there on out, I think it kind of becomes a revenge flick, a revenge for when love goes bad. Holy shit. When it comes to that, we are absolutely rooting for this kid to exact the sweetest, the coldest revenge possible. And the song that, when he gets his idea, like, I'm going to hit this bitch where it hurts, he's going to go recruit God to be his new speech partner, and he's going to take her ass down at State. The song that they use to help him be able to sing is the Battle Hymn of the Republic, which in itself is kind of a right out there sort of revenge type song. And I think it just kind of fits so perfectly for this, like, now mission that this kid's on.
That's where D'Agosto shines, is the scene where Hal is trying to recruit Wechselbaum. It's debate. Like, the kid dropped out of school. He's working in a dry cleaning place. But that's all he cares about still is debate.
And he debates himself.
Just the way he's having a conversation with Hal is a debate. And it's just played so perfectly. It's shot great because it's just a walk where D'Agosto is way taller than Rhys Thompson. So it's just Rhys trying to keep up with him. He definitely can't keep up with him verbally, but he's trying and trying to keep up with him physically. Everything about that scene is so cute because it's like the little kid going to ask Michael Jordan to play street ball with him pretty much, because no reason these two should team up, but it's just such a good scene there.
It's asking Michael Jordan to play basketball with you because for whatever reason you need to beat Larry Bird or whatever. So you're like, well, I got to get the only guy.
And you play basketball like Wesley Snipes.
Pretty much, yeah. You've got to get the only guy that can make that a reality. So, I mean, the scene's set. If you've ever seen any kind of competition movie before, you think you know how it's going to end. He finally recruits God. They come up with a plan. They get to the speech competition. They set up how the competition is going to work. First, we're going to do the first rounds, then we're going to take your win-loss record, and we're going to then figure out who's going to go against who. And you know it. All right, well, they're probably going to lose, like, their first match. Then they're going to kind of – they'll figure it out. They'll grow as a team. They'll catch on fire. You can see the montage rolling.
They'll meet Jenny in the finals.
Exactly, in this big auditorium
in front
of everybody.
We'll probably be left open. We don't know who wins. That's how it goes.
That's how it goes, but this...
Not so much.
Not that kind of a movie. You have what is and what should be and what could possibly be some very sweet revenge fizzle out almost as soon as it begins.
And that's another one of my favorite lines is, here they are, he finally, you know, his speech teacher had said earlier, maybe if you sing it, it won't stutter. So here he is, he's singing his debate, and he's killing it. He's absolutely killing it. And then
I've seen worse.
Yeah, and then they stop it, and he's like, why you stop it? I was killing it in there. I was killing it in there. Then he opens the door. I was killing it in here, right? And he just shuts the door. She's seen worse. Like, it's such – just his delivery of that is so brilliant, because even her saying I've seen worse brings up his confidence. It doesn't hurt his confidence at all. In his mind, he's killing it. He's nowhere near where he needs to be, but he's killing it. And even just being told I've seen worse magnifies in his mind that he's killing it, because he should be the worst there is. And then it's over.
Right. You think that maybe through this singing and through the help of Ben, like, he's going to become like this great debater. He's going to get all of these skills, but he doesn't. The closest he gets is, well, I've seen worse.
It's a revenge film if, like in Taken, if Liam Neeson didn't have a particular set of skills. That's pretty much what this movie is.
It becomes pretty clear that Liam Neeson's not going to get his wife and his daughter back. So at some point, like, all right, well, what's the best thing you could possibly get? And I think at that point, really, it's not necessarily keeping her from getting a trophy. In the grand scheme of things, as sweet as that would be, in the grand scheme of things, that's not really what it's about. it's the best revenge for Hal is being able to, and you mentioned it, gain that confidence that he started to get when he was working with Ginny. He was able to kind of get out a couple sentences without stuttering. He's feeling good about himself. And then when she left, he definitely sort of regressed. But, you know, it's that confidence that he got from singing. And he said, yeah, I was killing it. And that confidence carries on throughout the end of the movie when he finally orders his fucking pizza. And he pumps his fist. It's something so simple, not to get on a soapbox, we all take for granted, blah, 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 whatever. But he really does conquer his fear when he finally calls her out and he says, listen, you're going to be alone and you're going to think I knew him when, him meaning me, and you're going to be alone. And he gets the balls to stand up to her. He says everything he wants to say without stuttering horribly. And then he gets his pizza. So in the end, Hal does sort of get his revenge, but it's not necessarily at her expense.
No. At this point, it's because of her. He has this confidence, and she knows that. Like, she brought out his A-game.
And she tells him.
Yeah, I brought out your A-game. That was surprising that you went and got Ben. You know, like, I'm proud of you, essentially. And just basically saying, I don't regret anything I did. It made you a better person. And that's the end of it.
And, like, that was her master plan all along, was to make him a better person.
Like,
you're welcome.
There's no resolution. There's no she sees the error of her ways. Like, it's very – no. It's
there's
just,
no resolution for her. She has no character arc.
No.
She's
Gyllenhaal
in Nightcrawler.
Right. Like, she's just as evil when she starts as when she ends. And she knew what she was doing all along, and – at this point, it doesn't matter if she won the speech competition. The speech competition's irrelevant.
I mean,
the story.
She probably did. That's the way this movie went. Like, she left her speech, had a thing with him, went back in there, and probably still killed it.
And just the pizza scene, it's done so well because you just want him to say it. Mm-hmm. And, like, just his delivery there, that's why Rhys Thompson is so good in this movie, because all you want him to do is say pizza, and it's just... Obviously, there's no fish here, so obviously it's not fish. But you're just rooting for him, like, come on. It can't. You've already hit rock bottom. Not saying pizza now.
Don't digress again.
Yes, and then he says it, and it's great, and he ends up with three pieces.
For free.
And just the fist pump is so good, because that's the highest he's ever been. He killed it. Like, that's him killing it now. Like, he asked for what he wanted. He got what he wanted times three. It's such a feel-good moment after all this stuff. And
then he has the father comes back around again, and he has that kind of final scene where you can tell, like, he's a bit more confident, because instead of asking his older brother, who I thought was a really good character.
Really unique. Like, he was all the side characters. And just not to steal from your point,
sure.
But the scene in the bathroom after he steals the whiskey, where it's, I hate you for stealing that whiskey. That was Uncle George's whiskey. Uncle George hates you. Mom hates you for that. And then he finally gets in and he sees his brother is clearly destroyed. He sees something is clearly wrong with his brother, but he doesn't know how to deal with it. So it's just, that's all. I just wanted to say that. And then he leaves. Like, he's done. Like, his whole purpose in life is tormenting his little brother. And he has the sense to see, like, oh, he's I'm done. He's more tormented than I ever wanted to see him.
And the scene where he's talking about, like, right before he goes to the state competition, and he's always calling Hal a girl's name. And at the end, he says, hey, if I win, can you just not call me a girl's name? And he's like, well, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, he mentions that Penelope is his favorite girl's name, and Hal says, all right, well, if I win, how about you just, you know, stick to calling me Penelope? And I think that's kind of a very sweet moment between the two. I mean, the older brother, Earl, is clearly kind of a scumbag. He's a thief and he's a liar. But at the end of it, you know, he's still obviously
brothers.
Yeah, it's still his little brother, and he cares about him a lot. I think you see Hal, instead of maybe asking his older brother, because he's like the older one and that's what you would do, he sort of, I guess, realizes that it's not even so much asking his dad about love. It's more just like explaining his feelings on it. He's like, well, what the hell? This doesn't make any sense. Like, why doesn't this shit make sense? I can't come up with an answer. And his dad's basically like, there are no answers. So basically, like, all this shit you went through.
For nothing.
I mean, make yourself a better person out of the deal, which he did. But.
And that's why I think it summed up, like, it's a great high school movie. Like I said, Hidden Inside here is a great high school adolescence movie. I mean, it's not, there's not an adolescence movie hidden in there. That's what it is. But the high school portrayal, and it's great. And too many times these high school movies put this unrealistic emphasis on what happens in high school. He's like a sophomore. Losing the girl means dick in later in life. Like, it means nothing. And, you know, it's too many times high school movies fall in the trap of it's this catastrophic thing. And the whole point of this is just, it happened.
Shit happens.
Move on. You know, right. Like, do what you can and move on. And it was just very, very good. And it wasn't this big underdog story where underdog comes right. Like, it was underdog stays underdog.
It sets you up for that. And then almost goes out of its way, like, nope, that's not what we're doing.
And I'm okay with that. Like, you root for them. You want to see them do well. You want them to win that competition. And then it's taken away, and it's like, okay, that makes sense. They're not really homeschooled. Like, I get that. But, you know, it was a good effort. They could try. Like, Jeffrey Blitz did such a good job with the arc of this story, and the pacing of it's fantastic. I mean, it's joke after joke. And, I mean, they're subtle. It's not as dry as, like, British humor, but it's very subtle, well-written humor. And it's just a shame that I haven't seen – it's 8 years later, and I haven't seen another movie from him.
You mentioned some of the lines, and there are so many. And goodness knows, you really can't write them all down. But a couple of my favorite lines are Al's. And just – it's weird because he doesn't – obviously, his mind moves faster than his mouth. But he still says some shit. It's just like, after he finally gets it out, as long as it might take him, he's like, oh my God, that was really strange. One of my favorites, it's like right at the beginning when he's first kind of starting to work with Jenny.
The pendant?
She's saying that she lost this pendant. It's probably some pedophile that, you know, stole it to suck on it or do weird things of a sexual nature. And Hal says, I don't think anyone would think of you that way, sexually. And she's like, oh my God, that's the meanest thing anyone's ever said to me. And you could see that that wasn't his intent. But he's like, oh, shit. Yeah, that was not exactly smooth. And then he ends up really, this is after she's kind of cast him to the side. He doesn't know it yet. And he shows up at her house, and he's pounding on the door trying to get at her. And, you know, he's, I don't know if that's her mom that opens the door, but he says, oh, yeah, just, Tell her that I'm done with masturbation and I'm ready to show her, like the masturbation argument. Yeah. He's such an awkward kid, and you see that in the cello scene. That I think those are tremendous. And we talked a little bit about his older brother Earl. There's a scene right after Hal goes back, and his brother is the one that stole the pendant, which set off the whole, I don't think anyone would think of you in that particular way. When his brother finds out that he stole the locket, he busts in on him again in the bathroom. He's in the shower this time, and he says, "If it's like, if you do it again, I'm going to wipe my ass with your chapstick. I'm going to reach inside your eye sockets and rip out your pancreas."
Yes.
Yeah, it's just like, all right, clearly Earl's not really the brains in this operation.
And that scene, when it sticks for a couple seconds longer of Hal trying to put the shower curtain back up, but just not being able to. And it's just such a, like, real scene. Like, it just feels so natural because, yeah, he's a short kid. He's not putting that shower curtain up.
And the little friend, the one that lives across the street, he's got some really great lines. He's such a weird character. And Heston, the Korean sort of brother, kind of
the boyfriend, the mom's boyfriend's son,
exactly. They have a really fun scene where, you know, he's completely devolving right before he throws the cello. They're doing the whole like Indians and cowboy thing. It's a lot of fun. But one of my favorite things is this kid sits there with the Karma Sutra, and he's like, he's pointing it out, like they're just flipping pages, and he's like, yeah, my dad said he's done everything in this book, some of them multiple times, but he lost count. And the kid's like, in perfect adolescent style, he's like, why would you stop counting? Like, my dad could be the Barry Bonds of the Karma Sutra and no one would ever know. Between that, between Hal really not knowing how to get a girl and Earl's idea is telling this ridiculous joke and then just asking for a BJ after that. These are clearly great depictions of virgins and their interaction with sex. Like, oh my God, this girl, I mean, she's clearly playing it. Outside of the scene where they make out in the janitor closet. There's really no indication that she likes him at all. But just that little bit is enough to hook him and make him make a kid that who can't even talk join the speech team.
That's one. I want to go over a couple more lines, but the one scene that it's similar to Earl breaking in the bathroom and seeing how dejected he is. Such a great shot of a janitor's closet. The janitor walks by, opens the door. There's Hal sitting in there, clearly dejected. Janitor just parks his mop bucket, shuts the door again. No words are exchanged. No, get out of my closet. And so it was like, that Hal's such a good leading man because everybody cares for him and nobody wants him. But some of the other lines is there's a line where Jenny, I didn't write them down, so I'm kind of paraphrasing, but Jenny calls Hal and, have you ever wanted to burn the whole world down? And with no hesitation, he just says, all the time. Like no and hesitation.
Whatever like, she would have asked him, he'd be like, yeah, yeah absolutely, and, let's do it.
And when he first goes over to the Shortstack's house, whatever the kid's name was, his parents are there, the piano and the cello, and they're playing music. And the kid goes upstairs, and Hal's just standing there. And she says, do you want to go upstairs and play or stay down here and watch a couple work through their marriage through music? And he just goes, I'll go upstairs. Like, it's just, and then every time he's over there, that couple is just playing music. And there's so many like good subtle lines like that, that it really is nonstop jokes, just not in, maybe not your LOL type jokes, like just your real subtle, like witty, clever jokes.
Like and, understated. Even yeah. After he throws the cello, Shortstack says like to the babysitter, like, oh, she's not getting her
You're
tip
not getting
tonight.
Your tip tonight.
Yeah. Really, really good flick. I'm sort of glad that we decided to do this instead of Pitch Perfect. I think we'd had a tough time. Yeah, maybe we'll do Pitch Perfect next year. I feel like we'd had a tough time trying to dig into that one quite as deeply. But honestly, I love this movie. Sure, Anna Kendrick's in it, but it's not her movie. And
it's
she's
Reese
not,
Thompson's.
Right,
yeah.
And she's great in it because she's such a thunder cunt.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the reason that I like it is because of Reese Thompson. He's so good. And I don't know, maybe it's just because I was a bit of a nerd in high school, but I mean, I really identify with that character, and it's just, I can't see anybody not wanting to root for the kid. So I think from a writing standpoint, from a directing standpoint, even the, like, the way it's put together, I mean, it's over the course of a year, but it doesn't seem like it takes any jump cuts just to pass time.
No, it's very natural. Like I said, the pacing is great. Like, a lot of movies that, you know, like that jump over time, like Bring It On or like Wedding Crashers, like they're a mess with the time jumps. But this like moves naturally, and it really is like a mix of a Napoleon Dynamite, a Diablo Cody movie, a Wes Anderson light. Like there's enough there that people like. There's enough elements of stuff that people like all mixed together to become a Jeffrey Blitz thing. I'm not saying Jeffrey Blitz ripped off Diablo Cody or Wes Anderson or the Hess brothers. Like, it's his own thing. It's just there's elements of those that he clearly works with. I don't know anybody who's actually seen the movie that didn't enjoy it.
I don't know many people that have seen
it. And that's
the
sad thing, is not a lot of people have seen it. The few that have really, really like it for good reason. It's a damn likable movie. Likeable characters. The hateable characters are extremely hateable, but yet still likable, because even after all that, just for Hal's sake, you hope he's wrong about her. You hope that there is something good in Jenny and that he ends up with Jenny, even after all this. And it's just so well done, and it's character-driven 100%, and the characters are great.
Yeah, everybody's got their little moment, whether it's a joke they get or playing the straight man in a scene. It's really, really good. If you have seen this movie, we'd love to hear about it. Or, you know, if after hearing us talk about it for 45 minutes, you decide, what the hell, I'm going to go give this a try. But yeah, we'd love to hear what you think. I don't think that we're two weirdos that just like this movie for no apparent reason. But if you do see it, we'd love to hear what you thought. You know, let us know. Tweet at us at Movies On Up. Put it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Movies On Up. Or write us an email. Hey, guys, I like that movie. Or you're on drugs. It was boring as shit.
And if you're Reese Thompson, hit us up. What are you up to? What you got in the can? Do something. Like, you're so damn talented. Like, I know it. And yes, he did hit a growth spurt, and he looks like a leading man now.
Like, the kid, dude now.
The kid turned into a leading man. But I mean, between this and a high school president, it was quirky and, you know, whatever. Daydream Nation is something completely different. I know the kid's got talent. I just want him to, maybe 10 years from now, he'll be cast in a Paul Thomas Anderson movie and nobody will still care about him.
If you're that weird Jufro having junior philosopher kid, what have you been up to? Tweet at us. Let us
2-time
know.
2-time Oscar nominee.
Yeah, let us know. Movies on
and no matter how many times I've seen this, I forget Jonah Hill shows up in it.
Yep.
And I love it because he's done awesome. Like it's like a montage of that week, and he's in the background like every day, yeah. And it's so.
And
well
you can
done.
See like that era Jonah Hill definitely like yeah. That's absolutely in his wheelhouse, and when they let him do more, yep, he does that perfectly. Really good for what the junior philosopher was asked to do.
Yep. So that's our rocket science episode.
Yeah, like this movie. It's not exactly rocket science. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you. That's what this movie is, where my heart lifted off for Anna Kendrick.
I wasn't wishing you a happy Valentine's
Day. I was.
Day. All right. I was wishing the listeners a happy Valentine's Day, but you know, take that however you want.
Happy Valentine's
Day.
If you're spending your Valentine's Day listening to us, I'm sorry. It gets better.
Yeah,
we don't.
The important thing is that you just get better as a person. You'll be all right.
But yeah, we'll be
back next week.
Maybe
with,
Oscars? I think it's our Oscar episode. We love us some
we'll
Oscars.
We'll be back next week with our Oscars. We'll be talking about a bunch of movies that we loved
from
this year.
Theory Game, Imitation
everything. Of Everything.
Love it.
Yep.
Love it. Snipe me up some American
Selma Ketcher.
Sniper. Yep. So until then.
Keep it up.